नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ओम 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 नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
सो टुडे वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 11 Chapter number 2, Maharaj Nimi meets the nine Yogendras, text number 36. Kayena,
Kayena
Vacha,
Vacha
Manasendriyaya,
Manasendriyaya
Va,
Va
Pudyatmana,
Pudyatmana
Vanushrita,
Vanushrita
Svabhavat,
Svabhavat
Karoti
यत्
सकलं परस्मै नारायणायेति समर्पयेत् तत् कायेन वाचा मनसेन्द्रियैर्वा बुद्ध्यात्मना वानुश्रिता स्वभावात् करोति यद्यत् सकलं परस्मै नारायणायेति समर्पयेत्
तत्
स्पीच मनसा
माइंड
इंद्रियाय
सेंसेस
वा
और
बुद्धिया
विद
इंटेलिजेंस
आत्मना
द प्यूरिफाइड कॉन्शियसनेस
वा
और अनुश्रिता फॉलोड स्वभावात् अकॉर्डिंग टू वन्स कंडीशन नेचर करोति वन डज यत् यत् वट एवर सकलम ऑल परस्मै टू द सुप्रीम नारायणा इति थिंकिंग दिस इज फॉर नारायण समर्पयेत् ही शुड ऑफर तत् दैट Translation by the servants of His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In accordance with the particular nature one has acquired in conditioned life, whatever one does with body, words, mind, senses, intelligence or purified consciousness, one should offer to the Supreme thinking, this is for the pleasure of Lord Narayan. Please repeat after me. In accordance with the particular nature one has acquired,
in accordance with the particular nature one has acquired,
in conditioned life,
in conditioned life,
whatever one does with body,
whatever one does with body,
words, mind,
words, mind,
senses, intelligence or purified consciousness,
senses, intelligence or purified consciousness,
one should offer to the Supreme thinking,
one should offer to the Supreme thinking,
this is for the pleasure of Lord Narayan.
This is for the pleasure of Lord Narayan.
Purport. It's a long purport, I'll try to read it quickly. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has commented in this regard that a person who engages all the sensory activities of his body, mind, words, intelligence, ego and consciousness in the service of the Supreme Lord cannot be considered to be on the same level as a karmi working for his personal sense gratification. Although apparently still a conditioned soul, one who offers the fruits of all his activities to the Lord can no longer be touched by the countless miseries that arise from the reactions to materialistic activities. Because of enmity against the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His omnipotent authority, the conditioned living entity performs activities against the order of the Lord. Yet self-realized souls continue to perform all types of work within this world to carry out the mission of the Supreme Lord. According to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, those karmis who are sufficiently pious follow the example of the self-realized souls by trying to offer the fruits of their own duties at the lotus feet of the Lord. Although this is counted as karma mishra bhakti, or devotional service mixed with the desire to execute fruitive activities, such mixed devotional service is gradually transformed into pure devotional service. As the pious fruitive workers disengage themselves step by step from the bogus philosophy of enjoyment of one's hard-earned rewards, pure devotional service rewards them with complete good fortune. Srila Sridhar Swami has commented, Atmana Chitena Hankarena va anushritaya svabhavas tasmat. Although one may still be in the bodily concept of life, he should offer the fruits of his work to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Those with a primitive, materialistic concept of the Supreme Lord consider the Lord present only in a temple or church. They make some offering to the Lord in the place of worship, but in their normal activities they claim proprietorship, not thinking that God is present everywhere and within everyone. We have practical experience of many so-called religious men who become very offended if their children try to become servants of the Supreme Lord. They feel, God should be pleased with whatever humble offering I give Him, but my family and ordinary business affairs belong to me and are under my control. The perception of anything as separate from the Supreme Personality of Godhead or His proprietorship is called Maya or illusion. Srila Sridhar Swami has quoted, Na kevalam vidita kritam eviti niyama svabhavanu sari laukikam api. The regulation that one should serve the Supreme Lord does not refer only to prescribed religious paths, ceremonies and regulations. Rather, all the activities one performs in this world according to one's personal nature should be dedicated to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The words Karoti Yad Yad Sakalam Parasmaya Narayana Yeti Samarpayat Tat in this verse are very significant. A similar verse is found in the Bhagavad Gita 9.27. Yat karoshi yad ashnasi yad juhoshi darasi yat yat tapasyasi kaunteya tat kurushva mad arpanam. O son of Kunti, all that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, and all the austerities that you perform should be done as an offering unto me. The objection may be raised, since our ordinary activities are performed with the material body and material mind, not by the spirit soul, how can such activities be offered to the Supreme Lord, who is completely transcendental to the material world? How can such activities be considered spiritual? In answer to this, it is stated in the Vishnu Purana 3.8.8, Parnashrama chara vata purushena para puman Vishnu raradhyate pantha nanya tat tosha karanam. One who wants to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, must accept the system of Varnashram Dharma and worship the Lord through the execution of His prescribed duties. In Bhagavad Gita 4.13, the Supreme Lord has personally taken credit for establishing the system of Varnashram Dharma. Chaturvarnaya Maya Shishtam Guna Karma Vibhagasha. Therefore, if one offers his work within the Varnashram Dharma system to the Supreme Lord, such work is counted as devotional service. According to one's swabhav or nature, one may work as an intellectual or priest, as an administrator or military man, as an agriculturist or mercantile man, or as a laborer or craftsman. And while working, everyone should meditate on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, thinking, Yat sakalam parasmaya narayana. I am working for the Supreme Lord. Whatever results come from my work, I shall accept the bare minimum for my personal maintenance, and the rest I shall offer for the glorification of Lord Narayan. Srila Jiva Goswami has pointed out, Kaminam tu sarvathayava na dushkarmarpanam. One cannot offer dushkarma or sinful, wicked activities to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The four pillars of sinful life are illicit sex, meat-eating, gambling and intoxication. Such activities are never acceptable as offerings to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The example may be given that although in a free society, each person is allowed to choose his own occupation, even a democratic government will not allow a citizen to choose the occupation of thief or a murderer. In the same way, according to the laws of God, one is invited to work according to his own nature in the Varnashram system. But one is forbidden to adopt a criminal life of sinful activities, violating the laws of God. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has given a nice description of how one should offer one's ordinary activities to the Supreme Lord. He says that an ordinary sense gratifier begins his activities in the morning by passing stool and urine, cleaning his mouth, brushing his teeth, bathing, meeting his friends and family members, and discussing with them the day's business. In this way, one has so many activities during the day, and a sense gratifier executes all these activities for his personal material enjoyment. A karmi, on the other hand, working under the jurisdiction of the Karmakanda section of the Vedas, will perform the same activities for the pleasure of the demigods and his forefathers. Thus, according to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, a devotee of the Supreme Lord Narayan should similarly perform all of his daily activities for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. In this way, everything we do throughout the day will become bhakti anga, or a supplementary aspect of our devotional service to Krishna. It should be understood that as long as one identifies oneself in terms of the varnashram dharma system, rather than as part and parcel of Krishna, one is still on the platform of ahankar, or false ego. Because the varnashram system is designed according to the modes of nature acquired by the living entity through his material body. But the acharyas have emphasized in their commentaries on this verse that such a false ego, by which one identifies oneself as Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Sannyasi, Grihastha, and so on, should also be offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, when one becomes very much attracted to hearing and chanting about the Supreme Lord, and not merely offering him the fruits of one's work, one has attained the stage called Swarupa Siddha Bhakti, or the stage in which actual devotion becomes visible. The example may be given that although any good citizen will pay his taxes to the government, he may not necessarily love the government or its leaders. Similarly, a pious living entity can understand that he is working under the laws of God, and therefore in accordance with Vedic injunctions or the injunctions of other scriptures, he offers a portion of his assets to the Supreme Lord in religious ceremonies. But when such a pious person actually becomes attached to chanting and hearing about the personal qualities of the Lord, and when love thus becomes visible, he is considered to be reaching the mature stage of life. In this regard, Srila Jiva Goswami has quoted several verses that very nicely show the development of love of Godhead. Anena durvasana dukha darshanena sakaruna maya karunam karotu. May the merciful Lord show mercy on me by demonstrating the misery created by sinful desires. Ya pritir abhi vekanam vishayeshu anapayini tvam anusmarata same hidayan napasarpatu. Intelligent persons have unflinching affection for the objects of sense gratification. Similarly, may I always remember you, so that the same attachment applied to you never leaves my heart. Yuvatinam yatha yuni yunam chay yuvatau mano bhiramate tadvan mano me ramatam tvai. As the minds of young girls take pleasure in thinking of a young boy, or those of young boys take pleasure in thinking of a young girl, may my mind take pleasure in you. Mama sukarmani dushkarmani chayad raga samanyam tad sarvato bhavena bhagavad vishayam eva bhavatu. Whatever attraction I have for pious or sinful activities, let that attraction be wholeheartedly invested in you. Om Ajnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurulmanta Mena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. First of all, I would like to seek the blessings of all the Vaishnavas present, especially all the senior Vaishnavas, so that I can speak something for my own purification, and hopefully the audience will also benefit from it. So, we see in the first chapter of the 11th canto, or the previous chapter, that the sages headed by Narad Muni, they were in Dwarka, residing with Ugrasen, and they performed any fruitive activities so to award happiness to the people in general and to counteract various sinful reactions. So after their performance, Krishna sent them to a place called Pindarka, which is nearby Dwarka. So, the sages gathered there, and the young boys headed by Samba, they went there, and because of their familiarity with the sages, they wanted to make fun of them. So they dressed Samba as a woman and made him look pregnant, and then they approached the sages, like Narad Muni and so many other sages are mentioned, and they were trying to just prove that they don't know what's happening in the outside world or worldly affairs. But then actually they got cursed by the sages. And And the sages said that there is an iron lump, and that will be the cause of the destruction of your dynasty. And indeed, the young boy saw that and they were terrified. So they went back to the palace, they told King Ugrasen. He got that lump grounded to pieces and they threw it in the ocean. And so like that the pastime goes on. And then, but Narad Muni, he stays back in Dwarka because he wants to associate with Krishna more and wants to render him more service. And then Vasudev, Krishna's father, he takes advantage of this opportunity. Though Vasudev is a pure devotee of the Lord, still he wants to serve Narad Muni by hearing from him. So he asks him what are the duties which are, he inquires which are the duties which give pleasure to Krishna. So this is his question. Then Narad Muni, he recites a conversation between the king of Videha or Maharaj Nimi and the nine Yogendras, who are the sons of Lord Rishabhdev. So as we know, Lord Rishabhdev had 100 sons. First one was Maharaj Bharat, and in whose name this planet is named as Bharatvarsh. And then I think 81 sons of his were engaged in fruitive activities. And then nine of his sons, headed by Kavi, and their names are given, they went around the universe and they came across this sacrifice on the earthly planet, on this planet. And so they came to the sacrificial ceremony, and Maharaj Videha or Maharaj Nimi, he got up, very respectfully greeted them, and then he took advantage of their association. And then in text number 30 we see he asked the sages that what is the supreme good for all living entities. So this is a very important question. We see, like, because Maharaj Nimi is a devotee of Krishna, so he's very concerned about the good for all living entities. And then in text number 31 he asked another question, that how one engages in the devotional service of the Supreme Lord. So we see the answer to text number 30 is given, that the situation in which one is not touched by the slightest fear, that is the supreme good for all living entities. So, see, why does fear arise in the living entity? Because the living entity, who is eternal by nature, the jiva is eternal, when it comes in, when it identifies with the material world or the material body, then fear arises. Because the self is eternal, and the objects with which it is identifying are temporary. So that's why the living entity is very afraid of losing it, is very fearful. Especially we see, like, at the time of death, so many people who are not Krishna conscious, they are very fearful of death, because they are very attached to the body and they don't want to lose it. And anything in relation to the body also, they are very fearful of losing it. So, but we see by devotional service or sadhana bhakti, one can be fearless, because one understands that all his activities are in relation to the Supreme Self or Krishna. Because Krishna is the Supreme Eternal, and when we are in touch with him, so we gradually stop identifying with the temporary things, like the temporary body. One gradually tries, sees himself as a servant of Krishna. So then the next question was asked, how one engages in devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So then we see that this is also a very important question, that actually Maharaj Nimi knows that the perfection of life is to engage in devotional service of the Lord. And that's how one can re-establish one's relationship with Krishna. But how one performs that, he's asking this in question. You know, we might know we have to perform devotional service, but it is also very important to know how to perform it properly. And as we see, like in Nectar of Devotion, there's so many chapters which describe what is the process of devotional service and how one can perform it. So in text number 36, we see that then actually this question was asked to Kavi. The nine sages, one of them is Kavi. So then he replies to this this question. And he says, in accordance with the particular nature one has acquired in conditioned life. So here he's talking about our nature which we acquire in conditioned life. So then it's interesting to see how the living entity acquires a particular nature. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that when the jiva, he comes in contact with the three modes, with the material world or the three modes of nature, then by that association he acquires a particular nature. Just like the nature of a dog is to bark, so the dog can't start meowing, you know, or the dog can't, you know, like the nature of a tiger is to eat flesh, so you can't make a tiger a vegetarian, because that's his nature he has acquired in association with the modes of material nature, with the three modes of nature, which are goodness, passion and ignorance. So, and then one acts under the spell of that nature. It's very interesting this word spell is used, that one comes under the spell of the three modes of nature. Just like, you know, I used to watch Cartoon Network. So, and then there's some cartoons in which there's a witch or something, then the witch casts a spell, and then that person is under the spell. So it's like that, when we are come in association with the modes of nature, like we are under that spell. So somehow we have to come out of that spell. So one changes bodies like this, lifetime after lifetime, by association with the modes of material nature. So here, and modes of nature don't apply to only animals or other species, they also apply to human beings. Human beings can be like broadly classified in like four categories. Some are intellectuals, some are like administrators, or like some are merchants or like to do trade, or some assist the other three. So according to the nature we have acquired, and actually Krishna goes on explaining that what kind of happiness is there in the three modes of nature, the type of faith the living entity acquires according to the three modes of nature, what he eats according to the three modes of nature, and so many other things. So here Kavi is saying how one can dovetail one's nature to Krishna. Or here we see more specifically he's talking about karma yoga. And that's what, even in the purport we see that. So, but activities which are performed according to a nature, but if the results are not offered to Krishna, they produce reactions. So that's why Krishna has this system in which one can perform activities one likes, but if he offers the results to Krishna, then the miseries are counteracted. So if the living entity performs like some kind of activity, it might produce a good reaction or a bad reaction according to the type of activity. But whether it's good or bad, it's miserable because the living entity continues in the cycle of repeated birth and death. Even if one gets a good reaction, like we see somebody does some philanthropic activity and opens a hospital or something like that, so he'll get a good reaction, but still he has to take birth in this material world again. He has to die. So the way to overcome this, Krishna also says, and the Kavi is saying that whatever one does with one's body, words, mind, senses, intelligence or consciousness, one should offer it to the Supreme Lord, Krishna, thinking this is for the pleasure of Narayan. So but then we should see, why does the living entity not offer one's results to Krishna? The reason is due to rebellion against the Lord. And it's explained in the purport that due to enmity against Krishna, one doesn't offer one's results to him. One thinks, I'm the proprietor, because one doesn't recognize Krishna to be the supreme enjoyer, the proprietor. So therefore one doesn't offer the results to Krishna. One performs the activities for one's own personal sense gratification. But as the purport explains, that causes a lot of miseries and causes a lot of anxieties. But if one offers the results of one's activities to Krishna, one can be free from miseries. So, and then we see, so if one has to offer the results of one's work to Krishna, then how one has to do it? That is also explained. So, you know, like in the purport it explains that whatever one does with one's body, so with one's body, you know, one might go to work, for example, earn a wage. So if that wage is used to propagate Krishna consciousness, that way he is engaging his results in Krishna's service. So like with one's mind, so if one's mind, one thinks of executing Krishna consciousness or facilitating Krishna consciousness, then one is engaging one's mind in the service of the Lord. So with intelligence, like that, the senses, and with one's consciousness. So even in this third paragraph of the purport, it's quite interesting how one can offer the fruits of one's work. It explains that, like we see generally people, they think that Krishna is only in the temple, that Krishna is sitting on the altar. So when I come to the temple, I'll bring some milk or some grains. So that is my offering to Krishna. But whatever else I'm doing outside the temple, outside the boundaries of the temple, that is for myself. You know, the money I'm earning is for me. But when I come to the temple, I give a small portion. So that is not actually offering properly. Still we are holding back. And actually Krishna sees what we are holding back. What we are holding back when we are giving him something. So one can offer properly when he actually understands that Krishna is the supreme proprietor and the supreme enjoyer, and that Krishna is present everywhere and within everyone. So if one offers in that spirit, his results are being fully offered, and he makes rapid spiritual advancement. And also there's this verse in Bhagavad Gita, Yat Kuroshi, Yad Ashnasi, Yad Jhoshi, Dirasi, Yat Tapasyasi Kaunteya, Tat Kurushva Madarpanam. Krishna says that all that you do, all that you offer, all that you eat and give away, all the austerities you perform should be done as an offering to me. So in Karma Yoga, one does the activities one likes, but he offers the results to Krishna. So that's Karma Yoga. It's like, for example, one likes to play a particular instrument, so but he'll play that for Krishna. So then he's offering the results to Krishna like that. So one likes to eat a particular dish, so you know one can cook it, but first offer it to Krishna, then you take the remnants. That way, that way we are offering a food to Krishna, all that we eat. So in this way, one gets gradually purified and comes to the platform of Bhakti Yoga. And we'll see what is Bhakti Yoga also. But then, you know, in the purport there's one point that, you know, whatever activities we are doing with this material body and the material mind. But Krishna is spiritual in nature. So how can he accept material activities through a material body and a mind? And that's why Krishna has this, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Chaturvarnaya Maya system, Guna Karma Vibhavasa. That Krishna has this system of Varnashram Dharma. This is Krishna's system of accepting our activities. But Krishna says, this system is created by me, but it is not for me, it is for the conditioned souls. So actually Varnashram Dharma does not apply to Krishna. But when, like, we see Krishna performed his pastimes 5,000 years ago, it seemed as if he was acting in the Varnashram Dharma. Like he was performing the duties of a king. You know, he got up early in the morning. Like that, he did so many activities. And externally it seems that Krishna was is like one of us in the Varnashram Dharma. But actually Krishna is beyond it. Krishna has created it. He's not part, but he's performing these activities in order to instruct the living entities in general. And Krishna also says, like in Bhagavad Gita, if I don't act properly, then everyone else will follow me, and the three worlds will be put into ruination. So that's why Krishna says this example. But we should understand Krishna's position, that he's beyond the modes of nature, and he's actually beyond Varnashram Dharma. So the Varnashram Dharma is meant for conditioned living entities. So according to one's nature, like one might be a Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyasi. So according to one's nature, one performs activities and which are offered to Krishna. So Krishna accepts it like that, through the Varnashram Dharma. But there are certain activities which can't be offered to Krishna. Like, you know, one might say, okay, you know, we can offer any activities, so we can offer, like Krishna says, all that you eat. So one might think, I'll offer some meat to Krishna. I like to eat meat, so first I'll offer it to Krishna, and then I'll eat it. Like where I was staying before I came to the temple, not in Bhakta Bhavan, but somewhere else, because they don't eat meat there. Like I saw my friend, he actually took some meat and he offered it to the picture of the Lord. And then he ate the remnants. He said, now this is purified, I won't get any reaction for eating meat. So one cannot offer anything principally. It has to be in accordance with the Shastra, what one can offer. So like there are four activities, like meat eating, intoxication, illicit sex and gambling. These activities cannot be offered to Krishna. Or if we are directly connected with these activities, one should not offer the results to Krishna. I mean, still bad, like if one is working in a slaughterhouse, it's still good to offer the money to Krishna. No? I mean, one should leave that work, but say in the meanwhile he can. But generally such occupations should not be offered to Krishna. That's what also the purport says. But but actually Varnashram Dharma is also on the platform of the false ego. We see it is not that, because if one is performing in Varnashram Dharma, Hare Krishna.
I asked that question just now.
You can't go inside.
I want to turn on the
So we see that Varnashram Dharma is also Varnashram Dharma is also on the material platform. But then we see what's on the pure platform. Krishna says that, like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, like Krishna talks about Bhakti Yoga. If one can constantly remember the Lord, and he has a very strong attraction towards hearing and chanting, then that is pure devotion service. But whereas in Varnashram Dharma, the emphasis is on performing the duties and offering the results. Whereas in pure devotional service, one has an attraction towards hearing and chanting about Krishna. And one constantly remembers Krishna. But then Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, if one can't do that, then one should follow the prescribed rules and regulations of Bhakti Yoga and gradually come to the platform of a pure devotion or love of Godhead like that. So we see also that is also bhakti yoga. So we see like in Krishna consciousness, or nectar of devotion also describes like to accept a spiritual master and to follow the rules and regulations given by the spiritual master. Then that is also bhakti yoga, and one makes advancement like that. But if one can't follow that, then Krishna says one can offer one the results of one's work to me. So then that comes to like karma yoga. So when one has strong attraction to hearing and chanting, then that is pure devotion. And the example is given in the purport that just like a citizen, he might pay his taxes to the government, but he'll do it out of obligation or out of duty. So in Varnashram Dharma it's also like that you know, one might out of duty, one might offer the results of one's work to Krishna, you know, to avoid reactions, or out of obligation. But there's nothing wrong with that, because one makes advancement like that also. Krishna says one comes to the platform of bhakti yoga like that, gradually. But it is best to take the ladder, the lift to the top floor directly, rather than going through the ladder. So if one follows the process of Krishna consciousness, one can come on the platform of bhakti yoga. So then what is pure devotional service? Like Srimad Bhagavatam explains, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam Pada Sevanam, that pure devotional service starts by hearing and chanting. Actually by hearing about Krishna is the beginning of pure devotional service. Like yesterday we were hearing by Prabhupada that everyone is hearing something. You know, even the materialists are hearing. They go to college and universities to hear. So even the Mayavadis are hearing, but they're not hearing about Krishna. That's why their activities lead to frustration. But if we hear about Krishna, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, if we chant Hare Krishna and hear the Maha Mantra, we can make rapid advancement. And Srila Prabhupada said, one who hears properly can chant properly. So it is very important to hear properly, especially at chanting. We should though there are so many distractions, we should try to hear properly. And that way we can maintain our taste in Krishna consciousness or devotional service. So hearing is the beginning, then the rest of the processes automatically follow. And also we have to hear from the right source. So we have to hear from the parampara or the disciplic succession. One cannot go to any Baba on the street and hear from him. Like especially in India, you see there are so many Bhagavad Saptas going on. But because the people who are reciting the Bhagavad Saptas, they don't have the purity, so whatever they speak doesn't affect the heart of the person who hears. So when like one follows the four regs, chants Hare Krishna, then one develops purity, and then what he speaks has potency in it. So that's why we have to hear from the parampara coming from Krishna. And that way one can make progress. So hearing is very important, but from the right source. And like when one hears Srimad Bhagavatam, generally one should hear from the beginning. Like one should not dive into the topics of the Rasa Leela. Like in many Bhagavad Saptas, they especially dive in the 10th canto. And even in that, in Krishna's pastimes with the gopis. And because they are on the mundane level, this actually shows that they have lust in their hearts. And that's why they want to delve into such topics. But like the pastimes in which Krishna lifts the Govardhan hill or kills demons, they are on the same transcendental level as the pastimes performed with the gopis. So that's why Prabhupada also says in this introduction to Bhagavatam that when one reads Bhagavatam, one should start reading from the beginning, from the first canto. So the first canto to the ninth canto, they actually prepare us for the 10th canto. So if we go direct into the 10th canto, one will not have the correct understanding. So we'll just stop here and see if there are any comments or questions. Yes, Kaviri.
About the offering, when you said Krishna said you can just give in Patram Sushkum Phalam.
So, yeah.
But whatever you give with love,
has to
of
be.
Of course, you can't give meat and other things. But he said only simple things. Krishna says, just a flower or even water, you can't afford anything. But whatever you give with love, then he accepts.
Yes. Thank you. Any other questions?
In the translation, in the end, it speaks about purified consciousness. So you can understand that in the beginning, you know how to purify the body, your mind, and senses, you know, rising urge for the body and healing your body. And your words always thinking about Krishna, and your mind always trying to think about Krishna while you're in service. But with consciousness, how do we actually act in such a way that we actually want to purify consciousness while we're performing devotional service? Because externally we can see how we purify the body and our senses, you know, by, you know, smelling any items offered to Krishna or accepting items offered to Krishna. But with consciousness,
but this thing says it has to be purified consciousness. So how do you actually get that level of acting under purified consciousness, or with purified consciousness? By thinking oneself as a servant of Krishna, one can purify one's consciousness. Is that the right answer?
You don't give any answer. Is that when we use the senses in the service of Krishna, because Narada Muni says Rishikena, Rishikesha, Sevamata. So the soul has senses, but the soul does not have senses. So when you engage your senses in the service of Krishna, consciousness is becoming purified automatically. So then devotional service means that you don't just do the activity externally with the senses, but the mind has to be absorbed in the activity. So when the mind is absorbed in the activity, and if the soul has mind, then everything becomes purified. So the consciousness is becoming purified. It is on a spiritual platform. But the soul has senses, the soul has mind. So it's not material when you do devotional service, it's not material, but it's spiritual activity. And when the mind, the consciousness becomes absorbed in that activity, that's the function of the soul, we become purified.
Thank you.
What's the translation then? Because I don't think it's written it up.
Yeah.
He's put his hands in there. What was that for saying that?
It says senses, intelligence, or purified consciousness. One should offer to.
What does with body, words, mind, senses, and intelligence?
Senses, comma, intelligence or purified consciousness.
There's no and.
Or purified consciousness.
Basically, purified consciousness is a result of performing devotional service, even if it is done initially externally or in practice. The process of devotional service is such that even if it's performed in practice and one isn't fully purified by the performance of that activity, one will eventually become purified, so the consciousness then becomes. So the process itself is the means by which we purify the consciousness. In answering the question, as you say, think of yourself as a servant of Krishna. In fact, it's interesting in the beginning of the when you do the deity worship in the list of the old Archana Padati, you are recommended to perform Archana, right? Which is the external purification of the body, sipping the water and chanting mantras and so forth, taking baths and all those things. But then then you're recommended, before you actually enter into the deity room and perform any service, you chant what they call the Buddha Shuddhi, which is a prayer which basically says, you know, I'm a servant of Krishna, and I'm actually serving Krishna in my original transcendental form rather than in this material form. So that pure, you know, the whole process of devotional service is the means by which we come to that point of purification, and then, as Keshava mentioned, said, we're actually then situated we're situated both in the material body, but also in our spiritual identity.
Mm.
And, you know, as we advance in Krishna consciousness, then our original spiritual identity becomes more and more stronger, and more we become more aware of that, and less conscious of the, you know, the material aspect of our identity. And, you know, and you see that in the character and the personalities of the devotees like the six Goswamis, who would almost completely forget even to eat and sleep and do those basic external things, because they're so absorbed in their original eternal identity. So as we follow the process of devotional service, then gradually all of these things take place, and the whole process of devotional service is designed to bring us to the point of purified consciousness.
Thank you. Any other questions?
We were telling about coming and begging to do activity, not out of love, but that you want to do and offer that service to Krishna. What about this in a society of devotees or society of any culture prominent? There's always an element of social pressure.
Hmm.
So, because of that, you tend to follow certain things. So now what's the benefit of that, or is it good or is it not good?
The benefit of that is,
what's the question?
He's saying, like, even like in a Krishna consciousness movement, we see out of social pressure one follows certain activities, one doesn't do it out of love, like service or whatever. So, but he's saying, what is the benefit of that? That's the question. But he's not doing it out of like the example was given, that a citizen might pay his taxes not out of love but obligation. The benefit is that by even though engaging like this, one becomes purified, and then one starts doing it out of love, you know, gradually. That's the aim. In the beginning, attraction is always less, but by performing devotional service, one gradually gets purified. And then one acquires a taste for hearing and chanting.
Right. So now the point is, like, if it is done as kami yoga, one knows that it's good for him.
Hmm.
One knows it's good for him. And then he does it. He does it. And then he does what he likes.
Hmm.
But the point is, social pressure is like a little different, you know. It's, he really doesn't want to do it, but because of, so,
doesn't really want to do it, but
still good. Is that your point?
Yeah, either he'll develop a taste or go blue. So yeah, pressure for some time is okay, but you know, eventually one has to develop a taste for hearing. If that is not there, there'll be many problems, and then one feels forced in devotional service. I mean, forced to do all these services or attend class or whatever. So, and generally if one's hearing is poor, then we have so many problems. So many of problems can be linked to hearing. So if you focus on this one item of devotional service, then everything else will follow. I hope I answered your question.
No,
okay. Any other
question? What's the benefit of being forced by peer pressure to do something? What's the benefit?
It's engaging in Krishna service.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
It's just like a child doesn't, you know, they want to play all day.
Mm-hmm.
But the parent says, look, you've got to go to school. And you've got to learn. So what's the benefit?
He learns.
He learns. Mm-hmm. So, the benefit is to get engaged in devotional service.
Mm-hmm.
And purified as a result also.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, eventually the child actually becomes enthusiastic about their studies. Because there's a benefit in learning, there's a tangible benefit. There's a tangible benefit in being engaged in devotional service. And we experience that. Even if we don't like it in the beginning. What about that question? If somebody is simple and then they come and offer the results of their activities to Krishna, is there any benefit in their doing that?
I think there is benefit if they offer the active results to Krishna. They do get purified. And that might actually help them to get a taste for devotional service, and gradually they might quit their activities, sinful activities. Because like, even in, like Krishna also says, correct me if I'm wrong, that Krishna says that do not disturb the people, but engage them in acts of devotion. So in preaching activities, like we try to engage people, and though they are sinful, sometimes they give their give their senses or give their talents towards Krishna consciousness, or sometimes even they give their results. Or just like in catering, we are selling prasadam, but we are taking money from meat eaters. Like some people, one person came, he said he slaughters cows, but he was buying prasadam. So he's engaging his money, but then he's getting purified. And he might take up to devotional service, not this lifetime, maybe some other lifetime. He has begun that process. Yeah. There's definitely, but for a devotee to, but like if a devotee thinks, one who's practicing that, I'll do sinful activities and then I'll offer the results to Krishna, then he'll get a reaction. That's aparad. Like even the seventh offense in chanting of Hare Krishna, one should not perform sinful activities on the strength of chanting Hare Krishna. So it depends who's doing it again.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't say be a drug dealer and then justify it by saying, well, give the results to Krishna.
Yeah, he can't do that forever. Yeah. I mean.
So that's the state of consciousness.
Yeah, then it's consciousness. But if one unknowingly gives his results, then he's making progress. But if one is knowingly giving the fruits, then actually he's committing an offense. Like in Prayaschitta once, like in one goes to the church and confesses one or two times, I've done something wrong, Lord might forgive him, but if he does that every Sunday, then actually he won't get away with it. Is that right? Or?
Yeah. We also encourage everybody to sacrifice for Krishna consciousness. The advantage of that is that people then come into association with the devotees. They may be in a state of ignorance, but by the association of the devotees, they'll become aware that what they're doing is actually not good for them. And if they're a little bit intelligent, then they'll adjust their lives in such a way so they'll stop doing the unintelligent thing. See, the principle is to give to Krishna, regardless of what you're doing. And that's what maintains, that's what continues. Your activities may not be appropriate, so you change your activities so that the offering then becomes more suitable or more appropriate for Krishna and more appropriate to you, in the sense that it's more purified. So in the beginning we may do things in ignorance, but because we're offering to Krishna, there's benefit in doing that. As we take the association with the devotees, we realize that some of these activities that I'm doing, I shouldn't offer them to Krishna. So if the person's intelligent, they'll stop those activities. But you know, there's a lot of people that we encourage to become devotees and come into the association with the devotees, but it takes them a long time to actually give up their bad association and the unwanted activities that they perform. But we don't say, oh look, you're just performing all this nonsense, stop giving to Krishna. We give up encouragement, they keep giving to Krishna, because that gradually will bring the person to the point of understanding that I should differentiate here, and I should stop these things, and I should keep doing these things. So it's, it is a gradual process. Now, if we disallow everybody who performs sinful activities to offer to Krishna, then there wouldn't be anybody offering anything to Krishna in the beginning, because it's, you know, they just would be disqualified.
To keep the principle in mind.
Yeah. Yeah, but if somebody is knows the principle but then falls back into bad habits, then they're a special case. And they need extra special attention and support. And you know, sometimes you see it, the bodies actually go backwards. So then you have to be very encouraging at that point, because it's a tricky situation. But still we encourage them to give to Krishna.
Okay. I was just going to make a comment about that body, words, mind, senses, intelligence, and pure white consciousness. Because you see that, but then like the practical applications of mind, that formal knowledge to the Shakti's question was that mind, body, and words and senses can always see how you engage those. Intelligence, and you're using your intelligence on how to improve your service, how to think about what you're doing wrong. So you use your intelligence to work out how to improve and how to advance in your Krishna consciousness. Then the pure five senses, I think, in a practical application of that would be the right attitude and the service mood of doing your service. So that would be a pure five consciousness in that sense. Is that correct?
Yes. Okay. Thank you very much. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam.